Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it, all that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. And you know, as I do here at Threads, is stop for a moment to welcome our guests because they're bringing a couple of commodities that I personally deem very expensive because I know in my life they are. And that is their time. Charles, thank you for coming with your time because that commodity, my friend, is one of the most underrated and not used by folks that don't realize the power that they have with time. The other is your journey. It houses all the information that made you who you are today. And we want to honor you and thank you for coming to share that with us. Thank you so much for presenting at Threads of Enlightenment.
You are very welcome, Ken, and thank you for having me on. I think
and
I'm going to
tell them what you have so far. Tell them about those things that you have given birth, because I tell them when we go through the journey is to give birth. Talk to us about some of those things that you've given birth so far.
Well, I'm the type of person that has lived a life of trauma, and instead of letting that life of trauma take over my life, I've decided to use it to help others, to enlighten others about how they can support themselves in similar situations. And I do that through podcasts like this. Before COVID, I did it in live talks. I do it in my 7 going on 8 self-help books from lifeexperience.com. I do it on merchandise that I have now on lifeexperience.com, spreading motivation and enlightenment.
That's awesome, man. I tell people we go through the journey and because we're pregnant. And I believe that many people have not been able to deliver what has been deposited into them. How we do it here, Charles, is going back. We like to deconstruct your life, if you will, to walk you back your journey so that we can understand some of the tools that you utilize in order to get to where you are today. Talk to us about your family unit. How was that? Because you mentioned that you're one that have experienced trauma, and I believe that trauma is here to do a couple of things, and it causes us to want to become a servant so that others will not have to experience some of the stuff that we went through. So talk to us about your childhood. What was that, your first entrance into the planet, about, and how was it?
Well, I was born into a legacy, which was gone when I was 3 years old. My father owned multiple nursing homes and land all around the city, the Worcester area, Worcester area. And all of a sudden, everything went poof. Disappeared, and nobody knows why exactly. And after that, my grandfather built a duplex that we lived in on one side, and an aunt of mine lived on another side. And then my mother, when I was 5 years old, passed away of drug overdose, drinking and using pills, mixing the two, prescription medication. And then my father moved me and my sister around for 5 years. And I have a book out there called 10 Homes in 11 Years, which talks about all of that. And when I was 11 years old, we lived in Van Horn, Texas. We lived in a dirt poor house. My father and I slept on a full-size mattress, no box spring. Our clothes were in cardboard boxes. Our couch was a booth from a restaurant. I don't know what our floors were, but I remember our bathroom floor was concrete. It was a dirt poor house. And I remember one day, I woke up, my father was making coffee, and I could see my father outside the bedroom when he was making coffee. And it was like an aura, which I just found out last week is called a death aura. And I had a really bad feeling. And I went up to him, I told him, hey, can I stay home from school today? I'm not feeling good. I didn't want to tell him, hey, I think something's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
You know, and then he said no. I was starting to miss a lot of school, so he said, no, you got to go to school. So then I went in the bathroom and I shoved my finger down my throat to prove that I was sick. And I told him, hey, I just threw up. You know, I'm not feeling good. I want to stay home. And so I stayed home, and my dad took took my sister to the school, and then took me and my father to the store to get some food and probably milk and whatever. And he passed out on me in the store, and the store clerk knew that he was a diabetic, so gave him some orange juice that revived him enough to get us home. And then he passed out on me again at home.
Huh.
And then when we got home, he passed out on me again. And then I went to my neighbor's house and we rushed my father to the hospital, me and my neighbor. And that's where he died. He looked up at me. We were holding hands and he just was gone after that.
Oh. And so that's trauma, Charles. On the onset, you said you have lived trauma, and I can see the beginnings of it as you were talking about your family history, from your mom, the places you lived, the loss and constant losing of things and people and all of these things. In that situation, Charles, what happened to Charles, the young person, dealing with all of this coming at him? How did you manage yourself in that particular space where you are and seeing all of that and experiencing all of that at such a young age?
Well, when my family here in Massachusetts got us back here, my sister told me recently when I was writing 10 homes in 11 years, told me that I didn't speak for 6 months after I got back.
Wow.
I was a mute. I just didn't talk to anybody and nobody knew how to handle me. And some people in my family were looking at me, not knowing what to do and seeing me as my father's son. And my father was more or less an enabler to my mother, which they really resented, you know. So I had it rough from the get-go coming back home because I wasn't looked at as me, you know. So after that, I just turned vengeful, like the world owed me for the death of my parents. You know, I felt like the world owed me, and I was looking for family, and I didn't get it in my family. And this year in August, one of my lifelong friends passed away of cancer. Mm-hmm. And me and a couple of our old friends went up to see him in Burlington, Vermont, which is up north from me. And on the way up, I asked one of my friends, hey, what was I like when we were growing up? You know, and he told me, you were looking for family and you didn't get it in your biological family. You got it in us. Wow. You found it in us, in your, and we were your family. Your friends were your family. But even then, you know, I always was like, you know, wary of who's gonna leap next. You know, it was always in the back of my mind. You know, even hanging out with people, I had multiple groups of friends.
Yeah.
You know, I had like my main clique, but I had other people that I hung around with.
That family, as you're talking, Charles, as you found them, how did your friends tell you? How did you relate to them? How was your interaction with this family that you had found, versus whereas you weren't getting it from your biological group? How was your relationship with them and their relationship with you to be able to guide you in life as you're moving through with all of this trauma?
Well, they said that how do I explain it? They wanted me to, or I wanted them to be like a team, more or less, like a group, a gang of people, you know, like really tight. And I guess that's why I went into the military too, because that's what the military is, you know, a tight group of people, more or less.
Let me ask you something, Charles. When did you start back? Do you remember when you started communicating? Because you said you had shut down to the point where you weren't talking. Do you remember or recall when you started doing that, and what was the incident that brought you back into as far as verbal communication with people?
I really don't. The first few years of coming back from Texas, I have bits and pieces of, like a lot of my childhood and younger years, I have bits and pieces of, you know, it's like watching a movie and having clips taken out.
Yeah.
And trying to piece it together. You know, it's pretty hard to follow.
Yeah. Do you remember your high school days, as how it was and stuff like that? How did you interact with your surroundings while you were in that high school?
High school days, me and my friends started smoking pot, drinking, smoking cigarettes. I think my freshman year in high school was the only year that I was sober going into school. I started hanging out with some other people that were in my school, because my friends went to one school and my grandfather wanted me to go to a vocational school. So I went to a vocational school. Yeah. And I started hanging out with some of them who were in my shop, and we would smoke pot every morning before school.
Oh.
And then at lunch, and then after school. So I was stoned throughout my high school, except for freshman year. And then that turned into probably, I think, my junior year. That turned into heavier stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And everyone has to like an escape.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Everyone has to find, I mean, because how trauma works is we have a certain belief. And then when that incident happens, Charles, that belief that we have is shattered. And once that belief is shattered, there's a new belief that comes in and takes over that belief. And so we kind of like replace that previous belief with another, and just to cover it. And we keep moving. We find ways to move on, if you will. And how we handle that trauma and move on, some of us incorporate things like alcohol and drugs and whatever it is that we need to bring into our space in order to help us to move through the pain and move on. As you begin to move on and you're living this lifestyle where you have all of the outside stimulants are coming into your life to try and make you handle the day, as they say, because that is, I mean, you've been through some tremendous amount of trauma. Sometimes, at a young age, just to start your journey. So as you incorporate all of these things, Charles, and you're moving through, you're growing older, How did you manage your life as you look back? How long did you continue with the medication, if you really outside stimulus, to manage your pain and your trauma?
Well, I did that until I was 20, and I was still living with family, with my aunt. And she told me, pretty much, get out, get a job, but don't come back. Because I was just in that deep into stuff that I shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
And so I went out, and I went to the Army recruiting station, and I joined the military. And basic training in Army infantry in Georgia was my detox mm-hmm. off of crack cocaine. And I also stopped drinking and smoking pot and everything else while I was there, too. But, yeah, my main drug of choice was crack cocaine at that time.
Mm-hmm. And did your life in the military, because I know the military is a place by which one begins to, you're put in a situation where you have to change. You have to learn how to incorporate your mental awareness in order to survive places like boot camp. You got to tap into stuff like that, begin to now train your mind to overcome the natural pain and all of these things. How did you manage within that type of situation, having all that trauma and then being placed into a disciplinary environment where you now have to handle things a little different? How did you adapt to that?
It wasn't easy at all. The mental and the physical, you know, was extremely challenging, and it literally almost killed me. Especially the physical aspect of it, because trying to, you know, when you're doing certain medications, mm-hmm. you get extremely frail, skinny, and with cocaine, that's one of them. And in the military, it's very, especially in the infantry, it's very physical, and you have a physical training test you have to complete. And mm-hmm. for me to do that, thankfully, I had two guys, Hull and Dagger, were their names, and they would push me all the time to work out with them, do push-ups, do sit-ups, do this, do that. They were two people that knew what I was, you know, what I was going through. I let them in on what I was doing. And, they helped me tremendously. And, yeah, it really taught me, like, what I was capable of mentally, too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I wanted to walk away, and I didn't.
That's why I asked that, because I know the military is a place where, well, you have to learn how to master the mind. You have to incorporate your mind within the training, how to push beyond your limits and go even beyond that, and then go beyond that. You know, as you are managing and you have your team with you, walking with you and encouraging you through and pushing you through to achieve what is necessary in order for you to maintain yourself there in the armed forces. What was happening to you, Charles, as far as that younger man, that adult going through all of this and being placed in that situation? You got your team, the military is pushing you. Did you begin to wake up to your situation, or was it still, you were still not yet on that path to start changing? What was happening with you at that time?
I think I was beginning to change, change my way of thinking, like that the world owed me and this and that. Like, I got into something called the Better Opportunities for Single Soldiers, because I was a single soldier, and I became our battalion representative for that, and that was helping others, you know, helping us get a better life for the single soldiers. And I remember in Cuba, when I spent 6 months in Cuba, that role kind of turned into like a therapeutic role in a way. Yeah, that was my first taste of like a therapeutic role. And
what did you start to notice, Charles, about yourself as being in this therapeutic role, as you mentioned, and seeing people talking about their pain and recognizing that, hey, I'm in some kind of this space as well. When you start recognizing those things within yourself, John, what did you do to start to manage it? What were some of those tools you started to bring into your space, in other words, to help you through and get you to look at yourself and overcome your situation?
The biggest tool that I used at that time was just being me, you know, and relating to them. And, you know, like a lot of my fellow soldiers were freaking out because when we left Colorado Springs Fort Carson, we were told we were going to be gone for a month. And then when we got there a couple weeks later, they said that we were going to be there for 6 months. So a lot of them were married, telling their wives or telling their girlfriends that, hey, I'll be back in a month. And then, well, hey, yeah, I'll be back and I'm going to miss Christmas. You know, so a lot of them were freaking out. So I just became like, you know, there to vent to, you know, and to this day, I think that's the biggest thing that I can do for people is just to listen.
Yeah.
To be there for people, you know. Even now, I work for a place called Aware Recovery Care, and we're an IHAP program, in-home addiction treatment. And what we do is we meet the client where we're at, where we go to the people's homes, and we talk about their addiction recovery. Or we meet them at Dunkin' Donuts, or, you know, and we have the client for a year, so we really get to get into their recovery.
Yeah.
But I get complimented all the time because, you know, I'm there, you know, and I'm attentive and I'm not trying to push a program down their throat. I'm listening, you know, and I'm not, this times I'll sit there and I won't say a word. I'll just let them vent and then I'll give them feedback. But the biggest tip I can give people is you got to know when to shut up.
There's an art to listening, man.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, as you were listening to the pain, because basically it's the pain that you're listening to and their expression of those pains that they're carrying. And you began to recognize some of them in you, Charles. And how were you relating to yourself? And you're like, what were those language that you were using to encourage yourself as one that is listening to all of these? Because as a listener of pain, you have to sometimes talk to yourself to encourage yourself when you're seeing all of that. What were some of those conversations that you remember having with yourself?
Well, back then, I really don't think that it hit me in that way.
Yeah.
I think it hit me in that way when I was a homeless veteran years after.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can talk about that situation.
Yeah.
That was my grandfather and my uncle passed away, my grandfather being my legal guardian and my uncle being like a father figure, passed away a month apart in 2001 actually. And I fell into a really dark depression, cutting on myself.
Yeah.
And I attempted to take my own life, and I wound up homeless. And that homeless situation put me into shelters, veteran shelters in Boston and all around Massachusetts. And that's where I really started to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the homeless veterans alongside me, you know, like, you're not alone. Yeah, because when I was in Cuba, it was one thing. They were hurting. I wasn't hurting as much.
Yeah.
You know, but when I was on the streets and in homeless shelters, we were all equally hurting.
Yeah.
And so seeing them hurting, you know, that was like a wake up call. That was like, hey, I call that my crucible.
Yeah.
Because that was like my wake up call. Like, hey, you gotta, you got a job to do. It's time you wake your ass up and do it and help these people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I learned about PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that I had PTSD. I learned that I had it since I was 6 years old. All that time, I went undiagnosed. And that, I think that was the worst part of it, was that I didn't even know about trauma. I didn't know that I went undiagnosed. I didn't know anything about it. You know, so then when I did learn about it, and then I learned that I had PTSD, and then I learned about PTSD and complex PTSD and all that. And then I was able to say, hey, you can use this to help them.
Yeah.
And and that's where
How did you manage yours, Charlie? Because that's a pretty tall order, because you were traumatized and you had it from since a young man, a young boy, and carried with you all through your life. And once you got that revelation, I'm sure that was just a bomb blowing off within you. How did you manage yourself right there, Charles? What did you do to cope, and the tools you brought into your life to help you to come out of it so that you can begin to serve those folks that were around you?
I learned martial arts, Shaolin mm-hmm. Kempo Karate, which was a big help, really big help, you know, for the discipline and the, just the exercise and all that. The discipline, most of all, though. And then meditation and the yoga and, just going to my doctors. And I'm actually rewriting my books right now, republishing them, because I got a really great artist to help me capture what I want for my covers. Yeah. So I'm adding more information into each book, and I'm redoing the covers. And one thing I'm talking about with PTSD in my trauma-informed book is association. Like, to get the point across to veterans, I'm talking about, like, I don't know if you ever heard of a PMCS, preventive maintenance. Yeah. And I'm talking about, like, how coping skills tie into that. Like, we need to do a PMCS on ourselves, preventive maintenance on ourselves. Like, going to doctors and, getting therapy and creating coping skills and all that. That's, we need to take what we learned in the military, like knowing our enemy. Our enemy is PTSD.
Yeah.
You know, knowing our enemy, we need to know PTSD inside and out, so I don't want to get too much into it, because I want it to be kind of a surprise. But
anyone listening to us, man, that are in that space where, you're in pain, and Charles is talking about his situation, I know that he has the heart to help. And we were going to provide you guys the information so you could reach him, because it's important that you learn that you're not by yourself. You're not on your own, man. You have help, and that Charles is here to help you out. So Charles, talk to us, because I know the power of the meditation piece, because I use that as a tool to assist me in my journey to get from one place to another. And I tell people that the meditation is a powerful tool, because what it does, it gets you to slow down your thoughts. And once you are able to slow down the drum beats of your thoughts that they'll keep coming a million miles a minute all day long, where you have a chance to slow them down. And then I tell them, once you slow them down, you become purposeful with the ones that you allow in. And once you get to that place, you're moving from a life of victimhood to one that is now designing your outcome, designing your life as to how you want it to be. So Charles, talk to us as to when you started incorporating these tools, other than the yoga and all the other stuff that you talk about, and you began to design your life. You began to move from that space where we live, most of us, as a victim, to now one of a designer. Talk to us right here as to when you start moving that, what started to manifest in your life as a result.
I remember just this past year, I had a big revelation. There's a park near here called Purgatory Chasm, and I was going for a walk, and I haven't hiked in a while. So it was normal for me to just grab my headphones and, you know, take them with me because I'm going to listen to music because I, you know, don't want to, you know, have thoughts going in and out of my head while I'm walking.
Yeah.
And I started walking and I had my headphones around my neck and I'm like, you know what? I don't need the music.
Mm.
Like I was hearing the birds and I was hearing the mm-hmm. wind and I was hearing this and that. And normally I would be like trying to stop that in the thoughts in my head going into my head, you know, and I would do that with music. But then I was like, you know what? I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big revelation.
Yeah.
Just this past year. But, I see things like that throughout the years, you know, like, my attitudes changed. Like, unfortunately, a lot with, PTSD, you have anger outbursts.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, with meditation and yoga and my martial arts, I've learned to control my anger, you know.
Yeah, that's martial arts will help you with that. It's all about control. You become a weapon, but the fact about martial arts is not the fact that you are a weapon. The fact is that you're able to control all your situations. And, I remember, the Enter the Dragon, everyone remember that scene when the guy was picking on Bruce Lee and Bruce Lee said, let's fight, let's go in the boat. And, you know, the guy climbs out in the boat and next thing you know, he lets out the rope and let him out in the boat there. And so it's about controlling your situation. It's not about always fighting and proving yourself and what you can do and so forth. And so you learn how to master the self, because I was there and studying that type of martial arts. So I want you to talk to me, Charles, as to as you're healing and you're moving through your life and you are now serving. And I tell people what you just describe is when you're walking and hearing the birds and all that stuff. That means that you have crossed over. And when you have crossed over, life begins to become a little different at that place. And once you crossed over, Charles, and now you're looking at some of the men that are around you, and you now begin to serve them. I want you to pull out from your memory someone that you knew were going through some tough times and some trauma. But after you guys were sitting down and exchanging thoughts and so forth, and you started to point to them about who they are and in your conversation and the knowledge that you have gained, talk to me as to when they got it, Charles. When meaning? When that light bulb goes off in them and they're like, wait a minute. And then they begin to change and switch their perspective of how they used to think. Talk to me about one of those occasions and how that individual felt, and how did you feel when you experienced that particular exchange and, you know, thing that took place.
Mm. Years ago, I was teaching martial arts in a addiction recovery center. And one of my clients asked me, you know, can we spend some one-on-one time and just have me hit the pads? I had this mm-hmm. big pad that I let people hit to, you know, hone in on their skills. And he let out everything when he hit that pad. I mean, everything. And when I dropped him off at a class the next day at a different building. And at the end of the day, the person that was teaching the class said, hey, can we talk for a minute? And, I was like, yeah, sure. And she just said, hey, I just want you to know that you probably saved his life. You know, what you did for him yesterday, spending time with him with that, you know, changed him in so many ways. Just that one time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just letting him let out that negative energy, that frustration, you know, just That's what I think about when you said that.
That's a powerful story, man. Again, anyone that's listening to Charles and I have this conversation, and you guys are in pain, this young man has been through much. He talked about his trauma from a young man all the way through his life, experienced trauma, just lost all around him, parents, grandfather, uncles, I mean, everyone. And he just mentioned a little while ago about one of his friends, close friends. And yet he's still standing here. He's still here, serving. I want you guys to reach out to him and call on him. There's someone that is going to walk with you so that you are not there by yourself. There's someone that understands the loneliness of loss. There's someone that understands all of the other things that you hear us talk about coming from the military sides and the loneliness, all of those things that one experience when they are in the military. You guys have someone, as you guys, the terminology you use, I hear someone have your six. Here is Charles that have your six. I want you guys to get in touch with him and call on him so that he can even listen to you, because he has the skills. And that is the piece that sometimes someone needs to change their life. Is this someone to listen? And Charles is opening up himself so that he can be that one, and you can be able to move through your pain, your depression, and all the other things. Here is someone to help you guys. Charles, I want to thank you for coming to Threads of Enlightenment. This has been a powerful story, sir.
Oh, you're very welcome, Ken. Before I go, there's one thing that I often talk about it during the podcast. My suicide attempt was 20 years ago, 21 years ago. My son is 10 years old. If I succeeded back then, we both wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know, it's simple math. And I wouldn't be a seven-time author. I wouldn't be working for one of the most phenomenal agencies for addiction recovery, you know, ever. I wouldn't be talking to Ken Primus on Threads of Enlightenment. So many things would never happen. So if you're out there and you're feeling like, you know, you can't go on, get help. Talk to somebody. Do whatever it takes to go on for that one more day, you know, but just get help. I've seen so many people take their own lives when they have so much to live for.
It's my hope, Charles, with our conversation, that those that are listening to us and that are in similar situation like you would seek the help if you can't get it locally. Again, I will provide all the things. If you feel you want to go somewhere else, I'll provide Charles stuff so you can talk to him, because he's been there. He knows exactly how you feel. He knows how to help you walk through it, and so that you will not miss all the things that he talked about, living, having his child, seeing his son's face and the smiles and all of those things that you would miss as a result of your pain and your decision. Here is, again, someone, as I said, have your six, have your back. And you guys who are military, you understand what are you talking about, that you are, someone is here and that can understand you and what you went through and going through, so that you cannot be alone while you're here on this planet, man. Again, Charles, thank you so much, sir.
You are welcome, Ken. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome, sir.
Everyone who's listening to this broadcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves often invisible to us in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you. But always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.